trabajo de esta jornada, y el expositor irá marcando algunos descansos, más o menos cada hora y media, para poder tener un trabajo continuo. Y en estos descansos, si tuvieran alguna duda sobre la facturación o algunos elementos del detalle, aquí en el registro los podrán auxiliar. Bienvenidos.
So, does that mean we're starting? Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming. Gracias. Good morning. And I'm pleased you came for the second part of this workshop. Today is the more theoretical side of the workshop. Yesterday was the practical side. Just to refresh your memories from yesterday, we looked at the open course, David Wiley's Wiley Wiki, and talked about posting online learning resources in open spaces online. We also looked a bit at Alec Corus's course and talked about hosting live broadcasts online, and I talked a bit about Ed Radio and Ustream, and there are other applications we could talk about at length. This session today, once again, is being broadcast. Here is the Ustream broadcast, which seems very blank at the moment, but I know it's working. And I'm going to close it here so I'm not using extra bandwidth. And we're also broadcasting on Ed Radio. This is the Ed Radio Nicecast server that we're using. And we had somebody on Ed Radio listening. I don't know if we still do, but they were listening from, it looks like, Switzerland. And we may have more people online now, but I'm going to close this. If you want to comment to me at any time during this session, you can use Twitter. And the Twitter tag to comment is Ed Radio. And I'll be coming back to check this page every once in a while to see if anybody has posted anything on Twitter. We're a much smaller group today. Things change every time. And you've got tables, you can have your computers out. I do encourage you to go online and follow the conversation on Twitter. There may be people out there in the world as well, posting about this broadcast. There might not be. It's been a bit hit and miss so far. And I also encourage you to go to the MOOC guide on Google Sites. Many of you, which is really nice, have given me your email addresses. I've added all of you as editors, so you can edit on the MOOC guide. And so if there's something that you think about that you want to add during the session, please feel free to do that. If you want to take a phone call on your mobile phone, please feel free to do that. I know that people live in a connected world, so I don't tell people turn off your phones. That happens. What else did I want to say? Oh, yes. Again, because we have a small group, if you have questions or comments anytime during this talk, this presentation, by all means, please ask them. We've got lots of time here together. Now, I have lots of content. I was requested yesterday to create slides and all of that, so I have that for you today. I spent time overnight pulling some stuff together. So I have material that we can talk about. But I also value the conversation. I think the conversation is important. The conversation is what makes it worthwhile to be here live. And the conversation is what will make this a better presentation. And just to check with the translator, I don't see you. There you are. Is the speed okay up here? We're good. Okay. I'd just like to be sure of that. Okay, so how does that sound so far? Okay, here's the plan for today. goodness sakes. It never works the same 2 days in a row. What are we going to get? Oh, I see. Okay, it's going to be fancy for me. Okay. Nope. All right, here's the plan for today. This is more content than we will cover. So I'll tell you that right now. But I want to talk about the theory behind some of the practice that we saw yesterday. The practice that we saw yesterday involved three major elements. It involved open content online. It involved open teaching online. And it involved distributed resources. So the courses spread out on many locations on the internet. And that's the basic structure, the basic mechanics of a Connectivist course. And today I want to talk about why we do it that way. And especially about how that makes it different from the traditional course. I know many of you are involved in curriculum design, involved with working in courses on Moodle and other learning management systems. And this is a change from that. And it's necessary to explain what this change consists in and why we're making this change. And then after that, to talk about the success factors, what makes this change successful, how we know it's successful, how we know students are successful, and how we can best improve our teaching of students. That's the plan. Is that a good plan? Got some nods? Okay, great. Just gonna check Twitter. So yeah, we'll do this. So, and reload Twitter. They changed Twitter and they did not make it better. All right. And can you see this screen okay? Even in the back? Yeah? Okay. So let's begin with the topic of connectivist learning. Now I'm going to begin the topic of connectivist learning from where you are. And where you are is the learning management system. And the learning management system is the state of the art now. Someone was commenting yesterday to me, we must be behind here in Mexico because we are only using Moodle. And I wanted to be clear that that's not true. Most of the world is doing online learning with Moodle, with Sakai, with Blackboard. And if you understand these systems, you understand the state of the art in online learning. These systems were designed to emulate or mimic traditional course structure. And traditional course structure was linear, went from point to point to point. It looked a lot like a book. And in fact, almost all courses were taught right out of books. And so you have your traditional, your typical learning management system structure. And the idea of working in a learning management system is you cover the content. And the idea of pedagogy in a learning management system is that you are attempting to take this content and have the student learn this content. In a learning management system, the success of the student is evaluated by retention of the content. Do they remember what you told them? And this is accomplished by assignments, by quizzes, and by tests. And that's how most learning online is done today. It's a model of learning based on the idea of knowledge transfer. And if you think about it, this is probably the picture of learning that almost everybody has. You have the expert, the authority in learning, who has content in his head. And the process of learning is to take the content in the head from the expert and through a process of communication, put the content into the head of the learner. Does that sound familiar? Yeah. And when you look at the theories of distance learning especially, it's all about making this transfer successful. Moore, for example, transactional distance. Think about it. It's the distance between the expert and the learner. And the whole point of transactional distance is to create a mechanism of interaction so that I transmit content, you transmit it back, I transmit it, you transmit it back, so that I can tell that my transmission was successful. It's an old idea. It's an idea that comes from computer science. In computer science, there's a thing called the checksum. And when you have two computers, one computer sends a message, the other computer receives it, performs a calculation on it, and sends back the result of the calculation. If that result is correct, you know the information was transmitted properly. And that's the same as Moore's theory. Other distance learning theories are geared toward making the student, the receiver, receptive, attentive. Think of Gagne's 9 steps and, you know, gain attention. Right? You want people to be focused, receptive, ready to have content come in. But that isn't really how learning works. There's no way for content to move from my brain to your brain. There are many reasons for that. We'll talk about some of those reasons today. But the short form of this is that the content in my mind is very different from the content in your mind. There's not just a language difference. Although here in this environment, we can see the effect of a language difference. But when I say something like, Paris is the capital of France, I have a certain thought. When you say Paris is the capital of France, you have a different thought, because your experiences of Paris are different from mine. So the best I can do is to try to, as they say, induce the thought in your mind. Now, what do I mean by that? This diagram is a model from Harold Jarkey. Harold Jarkey is an educational consultant. He lives just down the road from me. He's a good guy. And you sort of see the transfer picture there, right? You see the content and the arrow going in and then make sense by, so there's some kind of processing happening, and out pops knowledge. It's this transfer model. And there is this transfer model in its barest, most simplest form. And it looks like data comes in and knowledge flows, right? But this isn't really what happens. Rather, instead of transferring knowledge, transferring content, we induce content. This is just an analogy. It's an analogy from the field of electricity. Now, I know you're not all electricians. My father was an electrician, so. But electricity is really interesting because the way induction works in electricity is if you have a wire with a current in it here, and you have another wire here, the current in this wire will produce current in this wire, even though they're not touching. And that's what I depict there. That little diagram there is what they call an induction coil. And the idea is one current produces another current. So you can turn off and on big currents with little currents. So the idea of the induction model in learning is I try to stimulate some experiences in you. I talk. I have you do things. I put slides up. I kind of put on a show, right? In my theory, I would say I model and I demonstrate. And what I'm trying to do is not to get you to receive all of this, but rather to get you to do thinking. Sorry, that was badly phrased. To get you to start thinking, to have your own thoughts, to let your mind wander. So it's not a content transfer model of learning. Looking at this in more detail, connectivism is the theory that knowledge is formed through the creation of connections and activity among those connections. So if you think about it, if knowledge is a series of connections, what is learning? Learning is the creation of those connections. In the human mind, which is one place where learning occurs, not the only place, those connections are connections between neurons. They're neural connections. They're creating a neural network. And if you think about it, imagine yourself training at some sport. You're learning to throw a dart, or you're learning to throw a baseball, or to kick a ball, or something. And you practice it over and over. What you are doing is strengthening connections in your mind. That's why I can't just transfer learning to you. Because I can't take the connections in my mind and put them in your mind. The connections in my mind are very different and always will be very different from yours. So I try to stimulate in you activity such that that activity will strengthen those connections. It's just like practicing a sport. It's just like learning to play a musical instrument. It's just like learning to speak a language. Makes sense? Well, this has big implications on how we think about learning and how we think about learning online. In connectivist learning, there is no curriculum. Now, I know that's hard for you as curriculum designers to accept. But there is not certain content that I'm trying to get you to remember. Because that's not how learning works, right? We just agreed on that. If you don't agree, speak up now. That does not mean there's no content. But what it means is that content is just a tool that we use to get people to practice, to get people to reflect, to get people to form these connections in their mind. But it actually doesn't matter what the content is. That matters a little bit. You want the content to be interesting and engaging, something that they will pay attention to. You want to stimulate these thoughts and these activities. But it would be a mistake to think that what you are attempting to do is to transfer that content. The content is like the ball in a soccer game. The ball, you need the ball. And it needs to be a good ball. But the ball isn't the point of the game. And you don't win the game if you get the ball. You have to do things. You have to practice skills. You have to accomplish certain goals. And it's the same thing in learning. Another way of putting the same point, in connectivism, the product is not the knowledge. It's the learner. We are successful not when somebody knows something, but when somebody becomes something. It's an ontological difference, isn't it? It's a very different perspective. It's not because there is no content. It's not because there are no facts. There are. 2 + 2 = 4. Paris is the capital of France. There are 8 planets, or 9, or 430. It varies. The point is, if you focus on the content, you drown in a sea of data, especially today. You can't memorize the content. It's not the sort of thing you can memorize. The content is complex. And so you need a learner who is skilled, like a person who can play a game, like a person who can surf, as Douglas Rushkoff would say, who is able to navigate this content rather than absorb it. So far, so good? How does this sound to you? So this leads us to the connectivist method. And I've summarized the connectivist method very simply. And you saw it demonstrated yesterday. And that's why I wanted to do that yesterday. And I know I had complaints, but I wanted you to see the practice so that now, when I mention this in the theory, you say, oh, I see, that goes there. And the connectivist method is 4 simple steps. We can make these more complex in detail, but they're 4 simple steps. Aggregate, remix, repurpose, and feed forward. If you think about it, what we're trying to do here is to have the person engage in a flow of information. We might say, we develop our neural net, we develop our minds by participation in a social network. The social network out there and the neural network in your mind interact. By immersing ourselves in the social network, we develop our neural network. I I don't have... Oh, yeah, okay. I don't have the slide I expected here, but I want to stop. I want to linger just for a moment on aggregation, remix, repurpose, feed forward. Because these are specific practices that I encourage people to do, that we encourage people to do in connectivist practice. When a person takes a connectivist course, the first thing we say to them is, this is what we want you to do in this course. Aggregate, remix, repurpose, feed forward. To aggregate is to bring content to yourself. That's what Grasshopper does. So we help with that. What we don't expect you necessarily to only use Grasshopper. Hello, welcome, just grab a seat. We're only about 20 minutes in, but we've done the most important theory, which you missed. I'm just kidding. We want to develop the skill or the talent of being able to aggregate, being able to see what's out there, being able to detect what's important. And I'll talk about some of the mechanisms of that later on in this talk. To remix is to join things together, to join things from different sources together. Even in this presentation, you notice how I join a theory of electricity with a theory of learning. Later on, I'll join a theory of thermodynamics with a theory of learning. In my presentations, I like to join words and pictures. We bring content together from different sources, different people, different points of view, and we blend them together, make them into one thing. The remix is a creative act. But remixing is not enough, because it's important to engage with the content. So you need to shape this content, to repurpose it, to form it into something new, to adapt it to your current context, to translate it to the language that you use, to put it into your own practice. And then once you've repurposed this, then it's important to share, to pass your content forward to others. And there's two reasons why this is important. The first reason is you have produced something of value that other people can use to support their learning. And secondly, the act of sharing forces you to be more reflective on what you have done with the content. Because it's not simply practice, it's practice and reflection. Or as they say, reflective practice. Doing the thing, but also thinking about doing the thing, so that you can correct yourself and improve yourself, so that you give your neural network feedback to grow on. So far, so good? Okay. So we talk about learning being in networks. We talk about knowledge as being the organization of a network. We want to think a little bit about what that means, because it's very easy to get confused, because there are all kinds of different networks. If you read, I think it's Duncan J. Watts, for example, he talks about networks of crickets. You know, crickets? You must have crickets here. Do you? Yeah. And I figure there's crickets everywhere. And it's really interesting what Watts talks about, because what happens is one cricket starts chirping, and then another cricket starts chirping, and another cricket starts chirping, and they're all sort of chirping, and then they start chirping together. in unison, a chorus of crickets. And so there's this network of crickets that has learned. And so we have different learning networks that we engage with, that we see in our lives. I want to talk about two major types of network, and it's very common to confuse these networks. And I'll characterize these as personal knowledge and social knowledge. Personal knowledge is the knowledge that we have. It's the knowledge in our neural network. It's what we as individuals know. Social knowledge is knowledge in a society. It's knowledge formed by the connections between individuals in a society. It's publics. Neural network or personal knowledge is private. It only demonstrates itself through speaking or actions. Public knowledge or social knowledge is public, and we can see all facets of that. But what's important to understand is that though there are these two different types of knowledge, underlying them are the same set of principles. The same principles that describe how crickets can learn to chirp in a chorus are the principles that describe how a human can learn to recognize a tiger. And these are the same principles that describe how a society can learn how to send an airplane from Paris to New York. Same principles underlying. And it's the principle of self-organization of networks. A lot of people have talked about this. This is not unique to connectivism. So many people have talked about it. And there are some interesting demonstrations. And I want to show you one. Whoops. But how am I going to get to it? Oh. There's got to be a way. This is so cool. You'll love this. And I'm going to plug in the room speakers so that you can hear this as well. Oh, come on. Sorry, this can sometimes be... Copy. You'd think it would be easier to do a simple copy and paste. There we go. I think that'll work. So for those of you on the radio, oh, come on. And it's not there. All right, here we go. Just take a few seconds for this video to load.